Hi, I'm Michelle Gunn, editor of The Weekend Australian. This podcast was made possible by our subscribers. For access to all our award-winning investigations, please search for The Australian subscription online.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Nowhere Child, a podcast about the disappearance of William Tyrrell. The song you just heard is Bring Him Home. It's from Les Miserables, and it's the official song of the Where's William campaign, which is the name of the formal public relations campaign that is designed to keep his name in the news. We're going to meet the team behind that PR campaign today. It's a fairly unusual thing to do, to engage a public relations company. And to be clear, they weren't being paid. They offset their costs by raising donations and selling William merchandise. But they certainly made sure that he didn't meet the fate of so many missing people and just get forgotten. Before we meet them, though, we have to introduce you to the new New South Wales homicide detective who's in charge of the investigation. His name is Gary Jubelin, and he's just taken over the case from Hans Rupp, who has retired. Now, Detective Jubelin is a very different style of cop. He likes to take what he calls a creative approach to catching criminals. And he's also not shy about using the media. And the media has in turn made him really famous. He's been the subject of a book and a TV drama. Critics say he's just a show pony. Don't stand between him and a camera. That's how one skeptic put it. And yet he gets results. He put the drug-dealing Parrish brothers in prison. And he did the work that led to Matt Leveson's body being found in a forest 10 years after he went missing. So don't stand between him and a killer. That's the other point of view. Detective Jubelin's commitment to policing borders on obsession. With his bald head and his broken nose and his sleek suits and his green tea, you'll find him on the job 15 hours a day. And he expects the same from his team. And the first thing he does upon taking on the Tyrrell case, for the record, it's now called Strike Force Rossanne, is review the files. And he's really not happy with the way it's been handled. He finds a couple of reports with William's surname spelled all wrong. It's got two R's and two L's. And he thinks, if they can't even get that right. And he also can't believe how little useful information is coming in. How can it be that nobody saw anything or that nobody heard anything? And so he appeals for assistance.
I'd also like to say, if anyone's got any suspicions about a person, given the wide media coverage of William's disappearance, if someone reacts slightly strange when the topic of William Tyrrell comes up, or someone talks, say, incessantly about William Tyrrell, those type of suspicions, if you have any suspicions, pass them on to police and we'll follow them up.
But it's not like he's got nothing to work on. Like Detective Rook before him, Detective Jubelin is particularly intrigued by Mr. Spedding. Now, they don't know each other, but there is something of a connection. 10 years before William went missing, Detective Jubelin arrested Mr. Spedding's brother-in-law for murder and also for the rape of a 10-year-old girl. The brother-in-law's name was Geoffrey John Hillsley. What happened was he bashed one of his old acquaintances to death with a hammer, and then he abducted the victim's 10-year-old stepdaughter and he raped her at knife point. And he also had some priors for the assault of a 5-year-old. Mr. Spedding used to be married to Geoffrey Hillsley's sister, Catherine. They had an acrimonious divorce during which all kinds of allegations were made. Detective Jubelin took a look at some of those allegations and decided there was enough there to charge Mr. Spedding with some historic child sex offences. And so, about a month after he took over the case, and that's about 7 months after William went missing, he did just that. He organised for Mr. Spedding to be arrested and charged with the assault of two girls under the age of 10 back in the 1980s. And for the record, Mr. Spedding would cry out when he was arrested. He denied all the charges, and in the fullness of time, he would be completely cleared.
William Tyrrell was abducted from his nana's home on the New South Wales mid-north coast on the 12th of September 2014. And somebody knows who did it. Do you?
that clip is one of the ads from the Where's William campaign, and as we said earlier, that's the formal name of the official public relations campaign that was designed to keep William's name in the news. It was developed by a PR company called Insight Communications, and the two people behind Insight are Alice and Claire Collins. They are a mother and daughter team, but to meet them, they really could be sisters. They look alike, and they finish each other's sentences, and their catchphrase is, "We do PR for good causes."
I guess if you're a parent in this situation, you want to do everything within your power to find your child. I think that was something that they immediately went, what can we do? What can we do? And the first thought was conducting a campaign. So at that point, though, the police weren't ready for it.
So when you say a campaign, were they thinking to themselves, like I guess we see more in the US, a big Amber Alert style billboards flashing, because I guess you're desperate.
Yeah.
Is that so? That's what they're thinking, and you have to be the people who come in and say, "We have to. This is what we can do, and this is what we can't do." Is that?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I think it was.
I don't think they really knew exactly what they needed or wanted at that point, because it was all so new. But they knew they needed something, and they knew that they were limited with what they can and can't do because of William's
circumstances.
The care status.
Claire and Alice were on a plane in September 2014. Heading to Madrid to collect an award for one of their campaigns, when the news about William flashed up.
Facebook. I'm looking on my phone on the plane before I have to turn it off, and there's a little boy in Spider-Man suit has gone missing. And Mum and I, we made some comment about it, because I remember looking out the window, actually, and we didn't really think much more about it. Then by the time
But to be clear, you don't know him and you don't know the family.
No.
Coming at this...
We had no connection.
As a member of the public, we had no connection at all.
By chance, they had friends who knew the Fosters, who got in touch with them saying the Fosters really wanted to organise a big campaign to find William. And it made complete sense to Claire and Alice why they would want to do that, why they would want to get everyone looking for William. And so they immediately said yes. But the idea initially got shelved. The police who were then in charge of the operation weren't keen on getting the media involved. They were more like, no, let us just do our job. But then Detective Jubelin arrived, and he was keen on public relations, but not for the reasons you might think. He didn't want the publicity for himself. He wanted to use the media to bring attention to the case, but that's not all he wanted either. He had a strategy in mind, and he liked the team from Insight, because Claire and Alice don't do public relations for big corporate clients. They work on campaigns to raise money for things like ovarian cancer and cystic fibrosis, and also for children's hospitals. And that's partly because Claire suffered ill health as a child, and she spent a lot of time in hospital, so she understands what it means to be a little bit vulnerable.
So we then, it would have been in May, early to mid-May, we got an email saying that there's a new investigator and the family have been told that they are interested in having a chat with you guys. So
was that new investigator Gary Judlin?
It was. He was very much aware of the public sentiment and the fact that people weren't coming forward with information because people often just automatically assume that the family must be involved, and especially when you add the fact that you can't see the family, that there is something suspicious there. Would you?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Claire and Alice wanted to help the family campaign for William's return. They felt like it was a good fit for their skill set too.
We've worked on many campaigns where you're dealing with case studies which are very tragic and a lot of patients and who tragically die. So we are very familiar with the sensitivity around subject matter that we work on. So I guess we were...
And also the fact that if it's a very personal... Illness is a very personal thing, and you build a rapport with people so that they... Because they have to trust you to tell their story.
Yeah.
And so it was a natural transition from... a health scenario to the scenario with William's mum and dad. So we said, yes, we'd be happy to meet with them. So that was the initial thing, and I will never forget that day.
Yeah.
Was bucketing with rain and they couldn't find the house. And I had to go out on the corner with it and wave and jump up and down so that they could see me in this torrential rain.
Yeah.
And by they, it was William's mum and one of her good friends, a girlfriend, who was very close to the family.
That initial meeting took place at the offices of Insight Communications, same as this interview. They are based in a beautiful old Sydney terrace house with a marble fireplace and an old grandfather clock. It's an intimate space and quite peaceful.
And we have an office manager who's a cat, and he, with a lot of our different campaigns, he's very soothing to when there's a distressing situation. People just often go take a moment out, have a pat with Dexter, and then they can resume whatever difficulty. I think Dexter played a huge part in that initial meeting.
Now, Claire and Ellis knew from the outset if they took on the campaign, they'd have to work pro bono, meaning they'd be allowed to solicit donations and they could sell William merchandise to offset their costs, but they wouldn't be able to charge for their time or for the campaign.
How can you say no at the end of the day? If any one of us finds ourselves in a similar situation, you would want all the help that you could get. And I'm not a police person, so I can't, you know, help in that way. But
we don't have $1 million, so we can't make a donation to help.
But I'm a communicator, so I can help communicate the messages that the family and that the police needed to get out there in order for everyone to bring William home. And that's why we wanted to do it, because I think, I don't know, I've always been taught from my grandmother all the way down through mum, is that you need to leave a decent footprint behind.
It was just, let's do it.
Yeah.
There was no question.
And so they took the job on and they met Detective Jubelin, who told them exactly what he had in mind.
So the key piece that police wanted was people to come forward with information, but also for people to think that he could still be alive, not to automatically assume that he was dead. That was really, really important for Gary, because the general public's perception was, well, we can't see the face of the parents. We can't, you know, we don't know anything. He's probably dead. You know, the family, as you know, and which was very much not the case in Gary's eyes.
Look, I remember Gary saying that we don't know. And we couldn't have done the campaign at that point had we believed that there was a possibility that William had been killed.
What did you think?
That he's alive. I have this, I like to think that he's with a family somewhere being loved. Because to think of the alternative, I couldn't keep doing what we do. It's just too hard. Sorry. We wanted people, because if he was alive, if he'd been abducted by a family, if he'd been abducted by somebody that just, you know, like couldn't have a child.
Like a childless mum.
Childless mum, something like that. We wanted people to be able to identify and look for him. Look for him in the street. Look for him in schools.
Yeah.
He could be alive. Yeah. He could be anywhere. And that was the pitch that we put out there.
And that was, as you say, very different from the message that the community had in its mind prior to your involvement.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
The decision to formalise the public relations campaign caused a fair bit of dismay for the tens of thousands of ordinary Australians who were already working to find William. One group in particular was made up just of concerned mums and their friends, and they had already organised a national walk for William, and they'd done a lot of work off their own back. They'd gotten the fireys involved and people were going to come dressed as Spider-Man, and they had posters and wristbands and sausage sizzles. They had more than 200 events in the pipeline, actually, and it was all done on their own time. and that was because they cared and they wanted to find him. And now there was a formal campaign and they felt like they weren't really welcome, and that hurt them. But it wasn't personal. Strikeforce Rossanne had a clear strategy in mind. It was partly about raising awareness, but there was a lot more to it. In any case, Claire and Alice got to work. And it wasn't easy. Everyone knows these days that William was a foster child. But back then nobody knew, because nobody was allowed to know. All the public was told was that a child was missing, and here are his parents, and then they were shown a picture of two people sitting in the dark, with their faces completely obscured, and there was no way really for the public to connect with them.
And there was a lot of, because of the William's care status and because the foster family couldn't be in the media, couldn't actually front the media, there was a lot of community, speculation around what happened.
The police did, the comms team at New South Wales Police did that interview with them in shadow. And then there was a lot of online talk about why are they hiding, what are they hiding, all those sorts of things.
So for people who perhaps haven't seen that interview, what is the problem with it as far as you're concerned as a communications specialist? When you see, as you say, the interview was conducted by, I think, a police officer.
Yes, a media person.
Right, yeah. And the foster parents are in the interview, but you can't see their faces. They're in silhouette, so you hear their voices.
Yeah.
What
when you say there was a lot of speculation afterwards? Yeah. Why is that? What's the public thinking?
It's number one. It's most unusual. Because when relatives of a person affected by crime appeal for help, they're always front and centre. So it was most unusual to be withholding their identity. So I think that was the key thing, and that started people asking questions. Why are they doing that? Why aren't they showing us their faces? And then there was questions that, why are they being hidden by the police? I remember watching it.
Yeah.
Because this was before we took on the campaign and before we'd met them. And I remember watching it and thinking, that's a really unusual thing to do.
Insight put the Where's William campaign website and Facebook page together. They also formed a partnership with Crime Stoppers because once the campaign started, they realised they'd be getting a lot of tips and calls that would need to go to the right place. And they also had to form an alliance with an established charity, Bravehearts at the time, that would handle any donations that came in.
We absolutely wanted transparency, but also a key factor, because I've worked in the charity sector for so long, for me, whether somebody gives you $10,000 or $10, that doesn't matter. It's from where that donation comes from and the thought and the care in the giving of that donation that deserves respect and accountability. So that's why for us the charity was so important.
And so no money and many, many interested stakeholders. I also understand you have no official spokesperson because the family can't address the media. A lot of secrecy provisions are in place, gag orders are in place, some information has to be kept private because there's a live police operation underway. This would be, in the minds of most communication specialists, an absolute nightmare.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. It was extremely stressful.
The campaign went live on William's fourth birthday, so that's the 21st of June in 2015, and it was an immediate success.
William Tyrrell was abducted from his nana's home on the New South Wales mid-north coast on the 12th of September 2014. And somebody knows who did it. Do you? Contact Crime Stoppers now. 1-800-333-000. Make the call.
So on the first day, we launched the website. He had almost 15,000 page views. By the end of the first week, we had almost 23,000 page views. In the 12 months of launching, we had 165,000 page views.
So the Where's William website and the new Facebook page were up and running. But that was just step one. Step two was for the team from Insight to organise the first major interview with the foster parents, with the highly regarded Michael Usher, who was then with 960 Minutes.
He was playing on the grass. I could still hear him.
In the blink of an eye, William Tyrrell vanished.
And then...
a little boy.
Nothing. That was it.
Gone. Sunday, 8:20. An unmissable, unprecedented 60 Minutes.
Why haven't you found William?
1 year on.
I just collapsed.
William's mum and dad open their hearts.
You can't take him.
Really, really disturbing.
And for the first time, share everything.
William was stolen.
What really happened the moment William was taken?
Headed off around in this direction.
And what now? And inside the investigation, unseen, new evidence.
I had goosebumps.
And new hope.
He's got nowhere else to be but home.
A 60 Minutes no one should miss.
Now, just to be clear, you can't see the faces of William's foster parents in that interview. They had to be filmed without being identified. But this was their first real opportunity to campaign for William, and they took it. And it was also Detective Gary Jubelin's moment to put the media to good use too.
Well, Gary wanted it, and as far as we were concerned, if Gary wanted it and felt it was required for the investigation to bring more information forward, then we had an obligation to do whatever we could to get 60 Minutes up and running. So we'd already been approached. We'd been approached by a lot of journalists, but we were very selective about who we dealt with. So we actually pushed really hard. This is about a missing child and we have an obligation to find him. And in doing that, we need this.
And we said,
really simple. Yeah. Nothing
yeah,
tricky.
Nothing tricky. It was just simple. And it's like it's of paramount importance to the police investigation in order to obtain the necessary information and release information that they need to release and obtain in order to find William. And therefore, it must be done.
At the end of the day, every activity must always be about finding William.
That interview with 60 Minutes generated more calls to Crime Stoppers than any other in New South Wales history. 1,500 calls. The operators could barely handle it. But remember, it's not only information that Detective Jubelin wants. He wants resources, and he would make no apology for doing whatever he had to do to get those resources. Donations were coming in. Claire and Alice say they raised $182,000 over 4 years. But that money couldn't be used for the investigation. That went on things like website development and media monitoring and sending out posters to schools and so on. Money for the investigation, so that's for the kind of work that Detective Jubelin really wanted to do, has to come from the police budget. And all police want a slice of that budget because they could all do more, meaning more counter-terrorism or other missing people, if they had more time and more money. And so you can maybe see how Detective Jubelin's campaign for more resources for his own case could put noses out of joint. Not everyone knows how to use a public relations company, and not everyone would get police permission to do it. But again, he makes no apology for that. He couldn't think of anything more important than finding a missing three-year-old. So step three in the campaign is for the team from Insight to make contact with Troy Grant. Now, he's the police minister in New South Wales at that time, and by chance, he's also a former police officer from Dubbo. They asked him if he'd be willing to organise a major event where the foster parents would be able to meet and where they'd be able to quietly lobby as many politicians as possible.
We were very fortunate in that we had the honour of working with Troy Grant. Amazing man.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful man. So through his office, we held an event at Parliament House in New South Wales. Now, I can say with absolute honesty that it was one of the most overwhelming sights I've ever seen, because when it was all done, William's mum and dad didn't speak or anything like that, but everybody knew they were seated in that a certain place in the room. I saw men in tears. I saw them, these MPs, line up to offer their condolences and to offer their support.
Yeah.
And so actually
and to meet them.
That actually is good evidence that you of the idea of humanising it,
yeah.
which in this case was so difficult, but once it happened,
yeah.
people were able to see, oh.
I still remember because I was standing up the back, Mike Baird, who was still the Premier at the time, he came in and he had tears rolling down his face.
The event at Parliament House featured that special performance of Bring Him Home from Les Miserables. That was the song that had MPs in tears. One of Alice's old friends, the actor Hayden Tee, helped put them in touch with Simon Gleeson, who agreed to sing it.
And we had Simon perform. So when we launched during Missing Persons Week, we had the performance up in Port Macquarie. We had to have a very special piano, which of course you can't hire in Port Macquarie, so we had to hire one here, but we had that donated by a wonderful company, which was great. We had to drive the piano.
So we drove the piano
yeah.
to Port Macquarie.
Yeah.
For this, because it had to be a specific type of piano,
yeah.
not just
that song. Yeah, to perform that song.
For the musical director,
yeah.
for Simon to perform that song. Because the only way the high standard of performance is maintained is with a certain standard.
Yeah. So we had to.
So we drove to Port Macquarie with a piano.
you personally?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did.
We fitted it into the car.
We drove it in the car.
Yeah. So. Yes. So we had that performed there. We had it performed. Simon performed it again at Parliament, and I remember we'd the run sheet. We had Simon's performance, and then we had Gary to get up and talk. And the first thing that Gary said when he got up there, because he'd been crying, was, Claire, never put me after that performance again. It's just too much. And it's just the poignancy of that song. It's being able to use, it's another element of communication, actually being able to use a piece of music to tap into people's emotion.
Yeah.
And it just worked really well.
In terms of winning hearts and minds, the campaign was definitely working. Pretty much every politician in the state was on board, and resources were being poured into it as well.
And as a result of, I remember, it was a week or two later, we got the call saying that the Gary's resources had doubled after that week.
Within the Strike Force?
Yeah, Strike Force Rossat had doubled as a result of what we were able to demonstrate during that Where's William week, from the event that we held in Parliament to all the activities we had up in Kendal. On the anniversary, all the activities happening around the country, it was very clear that this was an important case for the nation.
But as we said at the outset, Detective Jubelin had a really clear goal in mind when he authorised the use of a public relations company. Plenty of people thought William was dead. He thought the truth more horrifying. He thought William might be alive and being held, and that more than one person knew about it. The lyrics of the song reveal some of his thinking. He is young. He is only a boy. Let him be. Let him live. With his extra resources, Detective Jubelin had started investigating links between pedophiles who lived on the mid-north coast. He didn't yet know if any of them had anything to do with William's disappearance. But if his hunch was right, there might be some people in the local area who knew exactly what happened to William. And he understood that pedophiles will keep secrets for each other, and also that people will cover up sometimes for close family members. But what might happen if the government offered $1 million?
So the event had a couple of meanings for us. We wanted we wanted to humanise, but we also wanted money for a reward. Basically.
Yes, okay.
It was really interesting because we were here, weren't we? So many conversations about William have happened around this table. When we were talking, I remember Gary discussed that a certain amount had been offered for reward. And William's dad just said, that is not enough. It's not enough for my boy. And there was strategic thinking in that.
Yeah.
The concept was that if somebody, a partner of somebody who might have been responsible for William's circumstances, needed to get away from that situation, the initial amount that was mentioned would not be enough. Well, we thought $1 million would be good. And we'd done our research because Victoria was doing it.
With some success?
Yes.
Yeah, they had their $1 million rewards. So.
So we thought New South Wales is a little bit behind in this.
And what was the initial reaction of New South Wales MPs at the idea of $1 million reward?
Well, we didn't actually go to them.
What we did was with the event that we did, we wanted to introduce the plight and we wanted to sow the seeds of support and what was needed without actually saying, please hand over $1 million for a reward.
So that's why that meeting at Parliament House was so strategic in that when the time came, relationships had already been built between the family and the decision makers.
Yeah.
So it was very, very easy for them to say, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
So the possibility of getting $1 million reward in the campaign surrounding that, almost impossible if they can't visualise the family and see their plight.
Yeah.
And I know it seems like an odd thing to say, but also they've seen their suffering too.
Absolutely. And because they hadn't been able to be publicly identified, they couldn't identify with them as real people either. And we needed them to be able to do that with this.
Now, we should say that not everyone believes that reward money should be offered to people who have knowledge of a crime who haven't yet come forward. There is an ideological conundrum there. Also, not everyone believes that rewards work. We talked to Detective Hans Rupp. He was the first head of the investigation about them, and this is what he said.
Sometimes they work, but people need to have some information which is relevant, and that's not always the case.
This idea that if you offer a big enough reward to change someone's life, so, for example, in the example you just gave, a woman who's in a relationship with a bad guy, knows a lot but can't get out, has no skills, never had a job, is attached to him various ways, may have kids, but if you have a significant enough reward, she might be tempted.
From my perspective, I don't think the volume or the amount of the reward makes any difference at all. People want to unburden themselves for their own reasons rather than a monetary, rather than getting something down the track.
Although if it's enough to change your life, if it means you can buy a house, set yourself up, move to Queensland, that might help.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I really don't think so. I don't think people work like that.
There were some people inside the strike force who felt a bit squeamish about such a large reward. It might end up in the hands of somebody who should already have come forward. But what else could they do? A small boy was missing, and there was a chance he was alive. And if it was your son, you'd do everything, and you'd want the police to do everything. And so the reward for information that might lead to the return of William Tyrrell was announced at a special press conference on the second anniversary of his disappearance. The Premier Mike Baird was on board, standing there alongside Detective Jubelin and the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Andrew Scipione.
2 years ago today, the tragic disappearance of a young boy, William Tyrrell. Events that tore that family apart, that community indeed, tore the hearts of everyone across this state, indeed nation. What we need to do is everything possible to bring William home. And that's what today is about. As the Commissioner announced, we are providing the largest ever reward to bring back William to his family, to his community. Those $1 million, we hope, encourages anyone with any information to come forward, to reunite William with his family.
The Police Minister, Troy Grant, addressed Parliament about the decision to offer that reward. We've had to revoice what he said.
There is a perception that police use rewards as a last resort. This is not the case. In fact, police have clear strategies in place. In this instance, the announcement of this reward is part of a broad strategy to solve this case. It is unique because police strongly believe William could still be alive and there is the potential for him to be found and returned to his family. Some have questioned why this case in particular was deserving of a $1 million reward over other equally heart-wrenching cases. I stress to all victims, their families and New South Wales communities that rewards are never based on the value of a victim. This case is unique, and the belief that William is still alive was one key aspect that was taken into consideration when determining the amount of this reward.
And here is what he's not saying. Maybe somebody took William, and maybe he was being kept somewhere, and maybe more than one person knew about it. $1 million might be enough to crack that alliance. And you'll notice that the wording around the announcement is very precise. The reward is for information that will bring William home. It's about finding a boy who is perhaps being held. It's not for somebody who could point to his grave or to a suspect with whom they'd fallen out. Still, it was entirely possible that somebody could be offered some kind of immunity from prosecution, a so-called deal with the devil, if they helped bring William home. And so, with the reward in place, police waited, and they hoped, and they're still waiting, and they're still hoping.
And now this is tricky too, because 5 years on, we don't have an answer.
Yeah.
And I guess I have to ask you whether you still think, I know you said that you started out thinking that he would be found. Do you still, we're in the middle of the inquest as we speak.
Well, it's tough.
For me, I have to have this little vision in my head. Otherwise, I couldn't do it. That he's in a playground with other children. Until there's confirmation of something else, that is the vision that I focus on.
Absolutely.
We won't stop until we get an answer. We have to have an answer.
Yeah.
William's mum and dad have to have an answer. And so does
William's sister.
William's sister,
and his siblings.
And his siblings, his birth family, Gary, all the police that worked so dedicated, at working on that whole investigation. We all have to have an answer.
Detective Jubelin's campaign for more money and more resources worked. Offering a huge reward did not, or not yet. And that's troubling him, but it's not the only problem on his horizon. He doesn't yet know it, but there's a member of the public out there who knows the truth about William's identity, and it's about to come out. My name is Caroline Overington. This podcast is brought to you by The Australian. It is produced by Nicholas Adams Jazzbar. The executive producer is Eric George. New photographs of the police search for William have just been released. To see them, please go to theaustralian.com.au/nowherechild. If you have any information that could assist us in the making of this podcast, please contact us by email at nowherechild@theaustralian.com.au. If you have any information that could assist police in the disappearance of William Tyrrell, please call Crime Stoppers on 1 800 333 000.